there has been some pretty notable tactical experiences and operations for the Russian side that have advanced their formations in the last week or so, especially in the Pokrovsk area, Mirnograd, Kupiansk. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But still, even with those advances, with some substantial air power by the Russian side over the weekend that knocked Kiev out of power almost for 16 hours and severely damaged the system in other parts of the country, no one should expect that the war is on the verge of ending. Unfortunately, these things continue to take a long time, especially the Ukraine side. It has shown tremendous difficulty or are able to sustain under difficulties. They are long suffering, and no one is paying any attention in the Western world to the realities on the ground. So they're going to continue on. So we can understand that this is probably not going to end anytime soon, but we can also very confidently say we do know how it's going to end. We just don't know how long it's going to take or how big the final bill will be for Ukraine and the West, but it's going that way. Now, that's if you're looking at the reality of the situation. But if you're not looking at the reality of the situation, which is a majority in both the West and in Ukraine, well, there's going to be some real problems with this. And to try to help analyze some of this and to try to point out some of the things that are really going on, so people have an understanding of what's really going on, we have Andrei Mardianov back with us today, veteran author and Russian military expert, also host of the YouTube channel Smoothie X12. Andrei, as always, welcome back to the show.
My pleasure, Dame.
Let's just get right into it. There was, after the Trump and Putin conversation a couple of weeks back on the 2.5 hour phone call, Trump came out, as he often does, really excited about the, you know, where this could go. And he said, yeah, Lavrov and Rubio were going to meet shortly after that. And then they were going to set up a case to meet in Budapest, Hungary, between Putin and Trump. And Trump says, yeah, I think we're going to be able to get this done. So it looked like then maybe we were close to getting something done. But then right after that, at least reported in the Western media, there was a phone call between Lavrov and Rubio, which apparently didn't go well. Was a lot of animosity. And then that apparently sank the possibility of a Putin-Trump meeting. And they just said, forget about that. Well, now then over the, I guess it was the last 24 hours or so, Lavrov has again said in Russian media that he's perfectly willing to meet with Rubio. However, he says, the same demands are on the table as they were before. What do you make of the Russian position on this?
I mean, when you want the war, essentially, just a matter of wrapping it up. I mean, yeah, he repeats what everybody repeats for the last 38 months. Root causes or no deal. That's it. Simple as that. So, and if to follow the logic of the great military mind of several generations, and one of the biggest strategists after Clausewitz and Svechen, Mr. Ben Hodges thinks that the Russians have to kill more Ukrainians, because when Russians win, as Ben Hodges' logic goes, that's probably he's a strategist, we know, great intellectual, the Russians will take this part of Ukraine and they mobilize this whatever is left of armed forces of Ukraine, add them to the order of battle, and then we'll invade Europe. I mean, this is the type of thinking which is going around, but Mr. Lavrov, I mean, just repeats what have been repeated on and on and on. Root causes or no deal, period. It doesn't matter if Mr. Rubio, you know what, when you have some people have their genitalia in the vice, and Mr. Lavrov stands on the handle of this vice and tightens it, it doesn't matter what they say or what they do, which we can see the manifestations of the desperation and lying, non-stop lying in the Western media, just one of these indications to what degree of desperation, you know what, and fear reached basically this fever-pitched level, and that's exactly what is happening. Rubio is not going to hear anything else, period. Neither will Trump, period. This is, you just cannot do this, you know. I mean, so what can I say? Yeah, Lavrov will meet Rubio. Yeah, I'm ready. But here's the conditions. If those conditions are not met, well, too bad. But we can meet, obviously.
But the things are going to continue on the front lines. We'll get to that in a minute. Before we leave the subject of Sergei Lavrov, I wonder if you could address a lot of rumors that were going around in the Western press, especially last week, that there was some kind of rift between Putin and Lavrov, and he was apparently taken off the scene for a few days and lectured or something like that. But yet here he is back again. What do you make of all these statements?
We know what happened to the British BS Corporation. You know that, the guy. So this is primarily what Western media are. They lie. They lie for living. They misrepresent things. And so it's complete fantasy. And that's the only thing they can do. I mean, there are a bunch of the nincompoops who wouldn't understand the first thing about the world outside. That's what they teach them in their journalist schools in Ivy League, to know nothing. And so as a result, the only thing they can do is to basically go out, misrepresent, misinterpret, create mythology, lie. That's, I want to remind you, a couple of years back, CNN, during, I believe it was St. Petersburg Economic Forum, they asked Mr. Lavrov, who was on stage after their press conference and everything, and CNN correspondent, a reporter, asked him some things. He turned around and he told them, they're looking down on them, say, I'm not going to answer you. Write whatever you want. You're going to lie anyway. And that was his answer. I quoted him. So they lie for living, period. Average Western journal. He is he's a liar. Those people have no honor, have no integrity, have no humanity left in them. And so they tell them what they powers that be tell them to do. And the only free press which exists today in the Western world are American alternative media. As we are saying here, you know, that's it. New York Times, as I already stated many times, New York Times or Washington Post or anything on the Fox News, it's a cancer for your brain. They will basically keep people completely hysterical on the verge. But in reality, life goes on and things develop there as they are supposed to. But they're going to lie. They will continue to lie. And that's the only thing, because they need to spin things. Because many people in Washington now understand their ramifications and implications of the, defeat of the combined West, which already happened militarily. Now, as I already stated, it is all arrangement phase. And considering the fact that there are many fanatics and nut jobs in Washington, Russia plays it, you know, very cautiously, because who knows what those people can do. You know, they do not understand the actually consequences of, God forbid, if Russia and the United States go into nuclear exchange. The life on the earth will end together with them, together with the, everything they treasure, together with their relatives, children, what have you. Those people, especially neocons, and especially all those dispensationalists, you know, the, you know, rapture people, you know, they are ready to go for that. And so that's why you have to play this. And especially when you have the president who, obviously, Trump, he's bipolar for all intents and purposes. One day he says, and, you know, he's almost jumping with the, you know, elation that, oh, something big is about to happen. The next day, just nothing happens, you know.
I mean, yeah. You know, there's a couple of others that kind of fall in a similar category with that. And one of them is somebody who's an interesting character. We haven't heard from him for a while, at least not in the mainstream. And that is Valery Zaluzhny, who used to be the commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian Armed Forces. He depending on who you want to listen to, some say that he was really a good general and argued against some of the offensives that happened in 2023, and it was eventually sacked and blamed for it, and then was sidelined, then was later sent to, as the diplomat to Britain, actually, because many in Ukraine were very afraid that he would challenge Zelensky to be the next president or so. So they were trying to kind of keep him in control. Well, now he has written this, what is really an odd op-ed. Gary's got it up on the screen right there. Russian diplomacy is a tool of systematic influence in the war against Ukraine. And in there, he basically says a bunch of stuff about how Russia is kind of using propaganda, almost the opposite of what you just said from the Western media. He's saying that we can't believe anything from the Russian side. But then I have to pull this out at the end. This is how he concludes this article. diplomatic meetings to achieve peace lasted in total 5 years. He's talking about, he was given an example of how the Vietnam War was brought to an end. It wasn't quick. So he actually agrees with our contention there too. He said it actually took a lot longer. He said those negotiations sometimes reached a dead end. Then the parties exchanged ultimatums. Then they moved to a behind the scenes format. Then allies of both sides involved. Kissinger met with North Korea, North Vietnamese officials 68 times in total. In January 1973, peace agreements were finally signed in Paris, despite South Vietnam's rejection of them. The U.S. troops withdrew in 1973. The sides exchanged prisoners of war, and Henry Kissinger was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. The American diplomat accepted the award, but his Vietnamese colleague, and by the way, that was the South Vietnamese colleague who was our ally, refused because the Vietnam War lasted more than 2 years afterwards and ended only after the fall of Saigon in 1975. That seems like it would be a really bad analogy to use, since the similarities are quite stark to our current situation, and it could be not Vietnam, but Ukraine that ends up getting militarily defeated. What do you make of this whole article?
Well, Zaluzhny is a butcher. He's a classic example of the general who had been brought up together with Sirsky, by the way, who was responsible for bringing, since 2014, of bringing Ukrainian armed forces to the NATO standards. We know how those NATO standards worked out. He's a butcher. He's not very smart guy, I mean. But you know what? Desperation is such a thing that he was extolled by, again, all those morons from the Western media as some kind of a viable figure. Reality is, while he definitely had some also operational input, one has to be a complete moron to claim the 2023 counteroffensive, which didn't even cross to the first line of defense, a success. They lost almost 200,000 people there, but it was planned and executed, including on the operational level with the U.S. and British officers literally embedded as the operational control in the formations of the armed forces of Ukraine. It was done by Wiesbaden Group, operational planning. It was done by Mr. Donahue, who is now Supreme Commander of the U.S. forces in Europe. It was done by Mr. Aguta, you know, on the supervision of Mr. whatever his name, Lord Darth Vader guy. So, you know, what can I say? I mean, these are a bunch of losers. Sore losers. They never won anything in their life. They managed to kill. Zaluzhny probably has the blood of several hundred thousand of his servicemen on his hands because he is strategically and operationally is not sound. And that was the result. I can give you the direct references to the to people from general staff of Ukraine, where they stated that, you know what, we fought for 2 years as NATO field manuals prescribed to us. We lost, you know, we know now how many lost, and they had to go back to the Soviet field manuals. And so that's Zaluzhny. These are, you know, what people who have no real serious military skills, they did, and Zaluzhny was nothing more than PR creation. As a general, he's a pathetic loser. He is totally incompetent, and well, at least he had the enough guts to admit that Gerasimov is a military genius and things of this nature. But other than that, there are no good officers anymore. I just spoke to my friends, and they do not view them as, especially when you look attentively, this is the first war in history which we can observe, and especially the professional, can observe tactical minutiae almost in real time. And when you look at those people, I mean, it doesn't matter who they are. American generals, British generals, Ukrainian generals, they are not fit for the modern warfare. The only thing they can do is do for their PR, you know, maintaining some kind of narrative. And as a result, 2 million of the Ukrainian servicemen are dead. And more are being killed every day. Just this morning, I looked at the single funeral team. Single funeral team, it's about squad, you know, so about between 8 to 10 people, and they are cleaning their fields from Pokrovsk. I have video of that. And they say, okay, we are the single team, and each day we gather five Kamaz. Kamaz is a huge truck capable of carrying many tons. It's essentially 18-wheeler practically. And so we load, five Kamazes a day of the corpses of the. They just abandoned them. They don't gather them. They don't collect them. So can you imagine what we're talking about? And so people evidently sometimes lose absolutely the scale of the slaughter which is happening there. Well, guess what? They throw those bodies again, and those bodies of the those drugged and special forces and all kinds of other things, they get killed, just killed wholesale. They try to unblock, you know, Kupiansk. Well, they tried, all right, all that, you know. So, and that is happening for the last, for practically from the start of the special military operation with people who are utterly militarily incompetent in the West, concluding that Russian withdrawal from, at that time, 2022, was somehow, you know, the victory of the, you know, Ukraine, while in reality, Russians didn't see the, you know, sense to maintaining the front line at that time. So, and now when everything just crystallized and we see what is going on, it's like, yeah, if those people are considering themselves the great military leaders, let them go and teach in the U.S. Army War College. Zaluzhny will teach U.S. Army, all right?
No, thanks. Don't want
so,
that
yeah,
one.
There you go. But that's the kind of people who are there. So let him send to Sandhurst or King's College. Better yet, he's already in London. Let him teach this Lilliputian army, you know, which is a joke, you know. Okay, let him go to King's College. Let him teach those inbred morons who sit there, you know, and think that they know about war. They don't. And as the result, we have this PR campaign of all those centrally controlled by, you know, Washington Post. I don't remember who really. FBI or CIA. So Washington Post is basically controlled by them. You have all kinds of the neocons and warmongers, chicken hawks, who never saw anything, you know, close. And as a result, it's all PR. It's all to sell this narrative.
And listen, I wish it could stop there. I wish we were only talking about Zaluzhny or even some of these the British news magazines and organizations that you mentioned a second ago. But unfortunately, it's important for people to understand just how pervasive this is. Here is something from Fox News yesterday by Dan Hoffman, a former CIA officer, who's going to talk very confidently about how Vladimir Putin is on the ropes.
Russia has been targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure really since the beginning of the war. They've wanted to try to destroy not just the infrastructure, but Ukraine's will to fight, and then create the impression, false impression, that Russia is actually winning when, in fact, Putin has failed to achieve his strategic objective of overthrowing the democratically elected government of Ukraine. For Ukraine, it took quite some time for them to develop the capacity with their drones, state-of-the-art drones, and now missile capability as well, to strike inside Russia. And so we're seeing Ukraine target Russia's oil infrastructure as well as their energy infrastructure. It's an incredibly slow pace, a war of attrition where Vladimir Putin has just spilled massive amounts of Russian blood and treasure. And I think the question for Director CIA and the intelligence community writ large is going to be, when do we reach a tipping point where this war, this failed war for Vladimir Putin, starts to threaten his regime security? And would he ever consider an off-ramp, a negotiated settlement? Right now, he's not at all interested in a negotiated settlement, but at some point, that might actually turn out to be the case.
You know, I'll tell you, Andre, there's a lot that is inaccurate about that, but one of the problems that troubles me the most is that from what I've talked to other contacts here just recently, that they corroborate that there are those in the U.S. intel community, and he specifically mentioned the CIA, they actually believe that with just enough time, no matter what we've seen on the battlefield, no matter what's happened on the front line, just we need a little more time, and then Russia will end up being collapsed, and the people will turn against Putin, and he'll, as he said, seek an off-ramp. And so that's why they want to keep the war going, for this fictitious illusion that somehow Russia can be forced into it. Can Putin, is there any path, and I mean this is honestly, is there any path that Vladimir Putin can have enough externally push pain from the West that would cause him to not go after the root causes you mentioned a minute ago?
No, I mean, it's CIA is militarily incompetent. They don't have a single real Russian specialist, Russian expert there, because they purged pretty much the last generation. I mean, it ended with people who at least had a clue, were people like Larry Johnson and, you know, Phil Giraldi and you know, and even there, there is with Phil Giraldi, he believed until some recent times that, yeah, Russia's economy is smaller than that of Holland, you know, and things like that. You cannot explain to those people. They don't have background. This Hoffman guy, he wouldn't even dare to talk to me, you know, because he will be paraded as the technically incompetent hack, which most of them are. They don't have real serious military or technological engineering education. As a result, they don't understand even basic things which are related to the warfare, let alone warfare of the 21st century. So, and well, yeah, that's primarily coping. They try to, you know, basically alleviate the pain in their behind. But yeah, if they want to believe it, sure. I mean, they are good only at, you know, false flags and maybe killing some, you know, people somewhere, you know. Other than that, militarily, they are utterly incompetent. And so, of course, they will believe anything, which I spoke with Brandon Weikert recently. He correctly stated, even in Pentagon, the intel they get is intel from Kiev. Okay, sure. I mean, what do you expect? That's it.
I've heard that also recently, that they basically just, too many people in the Pentagon take at face value, not just the Pentagon, but the White House, take at face value what they get from Ukraine, not stopping to recognize that Ukraine has a very strong motivation to make the Pentagon and the White House believe a certain story so that they don't leave. And unfortunately, we don't seem to get that. It's also not just limited to the Pentagon and the White House, however, as this, and I'm just picking this one example out of here, but it's common among many in the Western Europe, and especially the UK, in that you have this really intelligent sounding individual who sounds really compelling and convincing that he really knows what he's talking about when he says stuff like that Vladimir Putin is now running out of time.
Putin has failed. It's a diplomacy that's not merely inflexible, but remarkably inept. He has failed to use the clear and obvious opportunity. Hasn't even really tried to give Trump an excuse to continue engaging constructively with Russia. Trump is palpably now frustrated and unhappy. That's the first thing. The second thing, barely less important, is that at the June summit in The Hague, NATO member states committed to a radical and rapid increase in their defense spending, 5% of GDP in 10 years.
So he says that Putin is inept strategically and that he has misplayed Trump. And then the third thing is that now then, because of all that Putin has done, NATO has this radical increase in defense spending, none of which would have happened if Putin hadn't done what he's done. What do you say?
As bad as it is in the United States, UK doesn't have military professionals. Their 44-week course in the so-called Academy Sandhurst, it's basically vocational schools, you know, for people who have no clue about anything. Then they send them to King's College, where they pretend that they know what the military history and operations are. But yeah, those people are like that. They believe it. They live in this alternative universe. They don't have toolkit to recognize things. Those who do, they are not allowed anywhere near, or they are laughed at. And do not forget, British also led one of the concerted efforts of rewriting World War II history, by the way. So when you look at that, yeah, that's who they are. They cannot live with the fact that, for example, United Kingdom, United States still retains the status of the superpower, you know, even if by the virtue of the massive nuclear arsenal. But United Kingdom, it's like, there's nothing. They're a joke. They do not have combat-ready single brigade to deploy anywhere. But they still continue to pretend that they matter. They don't. You know, they economically remove Rolls-Royce and some divisions of the BAE. What's left? Service economy in full decline, completely disintegrating society and things of this nature. But they still believe that somehow they matter militarily. They don't. They literally nobody, you know. But here are Yeah, there we go. Let them. This guy has to go and teach in King's College. They already produced a lot of the incompetents and clowns, you know. So I think so. They might as well ramp up the production of this kind of people. It is the crisis of the Western elites, not just only political, but military political people who have no clue. They lived, especially the last 30 years, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. For some reason, they decided that everything what happened there was because of them. It was not. It was a completely different story. But if they don't want to teach, learn, I cannot help them.
Yeah, doesn't it look like they have an interest in learning at all?
No, and they don't have toolkit. They literally do not have the proper apparatus, which is their, you know, the set of like you professional, you know, senior officer with some combat experience and things like that to say, oh, okay, we have this understanding of the issue. They don't have it. They cannot sit in there. They look at all those idiotic statements from, let's say, British BS Corporation, for example, which literally makes things up. They are also pedophile central. But the point is that you're not going to get them anywhere out of their state of mind, because for them, it also means in purely human terms, well, most of them are cowards. They cannot face the fact that everything they knew in their life and they were building their fake careers is lie. And it took the real serious war, high intensity conflict, to demonstrate everything of which that's why my book, actually the latest book, is called America's Final War. Although it's not just about America, it's about combined West. And so that's what it is. And here's the reality: they cannot face it. They cannot face it because they are both cowards and they don't have toolkit to recognize what had happened. And as a result, they sense the fact that everything they knew in their life, I'm not denying them any humanity in the sense that they have got their, you know, habits. They probably have a certain standard of living. They like to drink certain scotch. They like to smoke certain cigars. They like to attend certain clubs. This is all going down the drain, period. We're looking at, for example, right now at Germany or France. I can tell you one thing. Economically, soup kitchens are not far in the future there. And that's just the start. And those people, they sense it. Some have rational thinking about it, and they have enough courage to say, we screwed up, something happened. But majority of them not. They want to maintain their standard of living, which is totally tied to this globalist transatlantic idea. They don't have even remotest understanding of modern war. They don't have, most of them have no serious technological engineering education. None of them practically have any serious military experience. And as a result, you have this, like this clown, what's his name, Hoffman or whatever, they're from CIA. The guy just basically, it's like 1984, remember when Paul described those, the party meeting?
Yeah, that keeps coming up a lot here lately.
They say some words which have no meaning, and that at some point of time he said those words become this similar to the sounds of the ducks, you know, and geese. And so that's what it is. And if he doesn't have courage to face it, well, I'm sorry, but I'm on record. Larry Johnson is on record. Mr. Kiriako, who is, well, also is on record. I mean, they're not competent. Peter, this is
So let me ask you a question based on your unique position. So you obviously know the former Soviet style. You have lots of contacts in Russia, but you live in the United States. So you get a chance to kind of see both worlds from an insider perspective. And maybe you can help, I guess, give some kind of plausible explanation for what we see. Now, we're at this point too. We're closing in on the fourth year of this war. And on the one hand, I might want to argue that just rational people, any rational people in the West, would be able to hear all of these pronouncements of victory and Russia's, you know, about to fall apart, and their economy is about to collapse, and millions of Russians have been killed, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then they see with their own eyes that it doesn't happen on the battlefield. Now, I might be tempted to think at some point people are going to start laughing these people off the stage, like Hoffman, like some of these others, like some of these Keir Starmer, for example, Emmanuel Macron, Merz, etc. You would think that, okay, they've been proven wrong so bad that people would turn. But then I have to look at the Afghanistan war, which I observe painfully from the inside here. And I started writing the truth in public in 2009 in one step, but really in 2012. And then I had to watch another, you know, almost 8 long years of anguish and all of these pronouncements that they, all these generals and presidents kept making about it true. And it never turned out that way, but somehow the people kept believing them. That was 20 years. How does that kind of, that psychosis affect people where they can be told one thing with their truth, but it's so self-evidently that it's not true, and yet they keep believing? How does that work?
Well, I mean, it's there in some sense, as I already stated, it's a preservation mechanism. It's psychological. You cannot go. It's like I went through the collapse of my country, Soviet Union, you know, and it took a number of years before you begin to say, ah, okay, here was the reason. Here is the rational thinking. Some people didn't do it. Some people, I know people among my circle, some committed suicide. They couldn't leave, you know. So it's a very heavy psychological problem. And as I already stated, and it has a very serious material, so to speak, manifestation, if you wish, when, as I just spoke, those people got used to live based on the system. They attend their, they have their salaries, they have their mortgages, they attend certain clubs or golf clubs, they drink certain type of expensive scotch, and suddenly all this, what their careers were built upon, and whatever other things, you know, in their personal lives, apart from their biases, for example, many of them, they have, visceral hatred towards Russians. Many of them, out of those people, they have, they view Russians as genetically inferior and subhumans. It's also, this element is also present there. Suddenly, what do you do? Well, look at Nazi Germany. Many of them, they didn't believe also many things until they were started to be paraded through the movie theaters, you know, to show the documentaries about what has been transpiring in, for example, concentration camps. And they wouldn't believe it. So same here. They bought their own propaganda. And when you have nothing but verbiage, the only thing they are capable of is shaking the air. Like this Hoffman guy, he comes out on another pathetic, you know, news organization like Fox, which is nothing more than propaganda of the, well, it's neocons essentially. And so they speak, they think that because they speak, it's going to change something. It's a magical thinking. It was always there. But after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they by chance received this, you know, what, confirmation of their magical thinking. That, oh my God, what we thought, look, it happened. This evil empire collapsed and things like that. Okay, but did you ask a question why it collapsed? No. Very few people really started talking about it. As a result, they have been convinced for the last 30 years that America is Mr. Obama's state, is finest fighting force in history. Obviously, Zhukov, Manstein, and you know what, Roman Legion commanders were spinning. Napoleon probably, you know, went completely ballistic from his, you know. And you look at this, it's a comfortable world. Let me tell you, it's a very comfortable world to live in. When you pat yourself every day on the back and say, oh my God, look at us, we're good. I feel good about myself. And then suddenly everything you knew about it is gone. What do you expect? Obviously. And it's like Ben Hodges. I mean, he is a meme in Russia. People downright laugh at him. And yet this was the guy who was Supreme Commander. So was Breedlove. So were all those American generals. They are laughed at. This is the worst kind of humiliation. And as a result, the system is rigged such a way that until we get here in the United States, new generation of the politicians who are independent, who come in with the idea of serving the country, if we have the time for that to happen. But establishment, yeah, they are incompetent, they're corrupt, and as a result, we have what we have. And they will continue to do this. At least United States is safe for now. If it doesn't go into the, you know, nuclear confrontation with Russia, it should be fine. But Europe, it's even worse than that, because Europe, unlike Americans, they always had this hatred of Russian, majority of the societies. Not all. I'm not saying that 100%, no. But majority of Europeans, they hated Russians all the time. Do not forget, these were Europeans who were killing Russians for 1,000 years. And Russians have finally said, enough is enough. We're done with you. Go and die. If you rot tomorrow or you have the, you know, dying from hunger, it's your business. None of our business. Just Iron Curtain, and that's it.
And now then we're in danger of inadvertently making a new one here, I think, just by virtue of the death of Ukraine in between us. And that is being facilitated in large measure by the Ukrainian leader, Volodymyr Zelensky, who wants to now try to say, look, I know 19 rounds of sanctions plus those from Donald Trump have not succeeded. But you know what? Number 20 will.
В сьогоднішніх указах по санкціях політичні персони, російські урядовці, які працюють на окупацію, пропагандисти різного штибу, які виправдовують Путіна, які намагаються нормалізувати війну та нормалізувати окупацію. І також ми відправляємо під санкції колаборантів та кожного, хто працює на російську машину війни. Багато було вже намагань Росії брехати світу про те, що відбувається. Багато було намагань зірвати процеси зі Сполученими Штатами Америки, з Європи. На все своя реакція, свої санкції. Готуємо разом з партнерами в Євросоюзі вже 20-й пакет санкцій. Ми очікуємо протягом місяця підготовку змісту цього пакету і пропонуємо додати 20-й пакет санкцій Євросоюзу російських юридичних та фізичних осіб, які ще заробляють на енергоресурсах.
So, you know what? I mean, I'm not lying to you. You're lying to me. Russians lying. It's not me lying, even though what the Russians said actually lines up on the battlefield. But don't worry about that. Just listen to me. And we do.
Yeah. Russia's got a joke now. The 20th package of sanctions in Europe will involve ban on walking by Russians 19 previous ones. And so it's I don't know. It's like I need to interpret the madman, you know, that what he lives in his. Well, he is afraid, of course, for his life, no doubt about it. And he knows that he probably a dead man walking. But I mean, he is. Let him go to Capitol Hill, befriend more people like Lindsey Graham. He will find the understanding there. They love Nazis. As long as anybody kills Russians, they will love it, you know. So those are genocidal maniacs there. And he is the same thing. But obviously, as I already stated, even the tactical minutia, forget about operations, forget about movement of divisions, you know, corps and what is done. And it's not about the territory, albeit, obviously, today Russians involved into yet another penetration of the Kharkov area, so, and it's deep, and it will continue. But Russians don't need those territories, as has been stated many times. There will be buffer zone, that no doubt about it. But it's not territories that Russians want to take on its balance, so to speak, enough those four regions. And I don't know, you know, it's like, trying to interpret what the madman with the really, inflamed mind tries to project. But they love him in Western media, so let them continue to love him. Meanwhile, as I already stated, just on the tactical level, you see an unbelievable slaughter. Just today, in the morning, yet another attempt by, and again, when they say offensive, I understand those people in media, Western media, they have no clue about warfare. They're militarily illiterate, but offensive is actually operation. And they talk about attacks because they cannot master more than a battalion one at a time, really. So they throw in those people. First, you know, DRG goes in, killed 10 of them, done within 20 minutes. The best of the best, you know, special forces. Then they throw another 20. Well, guess what? Out of those 20, 15 are killed immediately. Some are wounded, left on the battlefield. And that happens everywhere. Russians are really satisfied with the fact that their planning is such that they don't need to go further. As Alexander Svechin stated, is the capturing of the territory is a necessary evil. when it compared to the main political objective of the physical annihilation of the force of the enemy. And so that's what many people do not understand, that it is all about killing. I'm sorry, that's what war is. You kill people there. There's no, you know, dilly-dally stuff there. And Russians have been very good at killing them, and they will continue to kill them until they literally ran out of the last Ukrainian. And if you look attentively at what even POWs say there, they, as already stated, well, today already Mirnograd completely surrounded and Russians are deep into Mirnograd. Forget about Pokrovsk. It's pretty much basically finishing mopping up operations because they need to go to every single cellar, every single basement, every single civilian house where they hide and literally extricate them from there. Well, that's what mopping up is. And so the same goes with Kupiansk. In the morning, there were attempts on relieving the force. Guess what? All killed. So now they're cosplaying Luftwaffe of 1942, winter 1942, December 1942, trying to relieve the surrounded six and element of the Fourth Army of Paulus and Stalingrad. And Luftwaffe at that time had the loading capacity. They still couldn't deliver 600 tons required for the existence or basic needs of those armies. Well, they're trying to use drones with the loading capacity of 15 kilograms to drop some supplies there. Obviously, most of those drones are shut down. And this is like ridiculous. But they do believe that many of them that, as you stated, a little bit more, another million of Ukrainians dead and Russia will collapse. You cannot explain to those people, especially with the degrees with economics from Ivy League, that what they know about economics is primarily Wall Street BS. You know, they don't understand what real economy, which sits on the third of the world resources in everything.
Yeah. You mentioned just a second ago the Kharkiv area.
To rare earth metals, to everything. They don't understand this. Russia is the only, United States tentatively with the Canada could be the second one, but Russia is the only country which can go full autarky and be all right. But those people don't understand that. You know, they believe in all those stories. They believe that somehow, Elon Musk produces $1 trillion or something. So it's a joke. They became a joke and they are laughed at by all professionals around the world. But what can I say? I mean, if they want to kill more people, Russians will oblige.
Well, that's what I wanted. Everybody's been talking about, Kupiansk and Pokrovsk and Mirnograd, which we showed a second ago. But you mentioned a second ago Kharkiv area. And we can see here just in the last little bit of time, there's been more and more Russian red that's put up in here. Yeah. A little bit up in this norm here. Volchansk is moving a little bit further south. What's going on in the Kharkiv area? And should Ukraine be more concerned about that?
Because they do have around Kharkov. They still have a little bit of the forests around Kharkov. If you look at it, the rest of it is primarily fields with all those crisscrossing of the so-called, constant hamlets and strips of the forest. Russians are creating there the same as in Sumy area, their buffer zone. The zone which allows you to control actually deeper into the territory or any kind of the terrorist or activity, for example, connected to launching something like HIMARS or, so until all of them are completely destroyed. So that's what is happening. Buffer zone. Russians are not very interested in taking those territories now. They are interested in pushing basically their control zone further inside Ukrainian territory, fix their positions there, and thus making life in the immediate border regions of, for example, Belgorod Oblast and more livable, so to speak. And that's what is happening. It's a buffer zone, cordon sanitaire, if you wish, and it will expand, obviously. So,
and what about in the air? Because the other that's all the tactical front line, but the Russian air campaign has just been merciless and has really been having more and more effect, even in Kiev. Lvov and several other major cities, Dnipropetrovsk, some of the other cities in Poltava, etc. What is the Russian expectation? If they're trying to just kill people on the front lines, what is the objective of the air campaign?
I mean, deny the power generating capacity of Ukraine, because primarily most of the industrial objects which have been able to produce some kind of the military hardware, not sophisticated one, not something like which is really capable of doing something, but at least from small arms to repairing the armor, whatever they can salvage and things of this nature, they have been destroyed, including, as I already stated, the key telltale sign was when Russians touched, which they didn't before, they touched a couple months ago, Motor Siege. Because it was the key industrial plant which was producing Ivchenko famous jet turbines. Chinese wanted to buy it. So Russians a couple months ago said, oh, okay, enough is enough. And off they went with Kinzhal and Iskanders, and it's gone now. And so the same happening now with power generating capability. Do not forget that this power generating capability, which is primarily the remnants, it's what Soviet Union left Ukraine, was designed for 52 million people. In 1990s, when the you know, industrially Ukraine, as it was left in 1990s by Soviet Union and Soviet Russia, if you wish, you know, was a very industrially developed country. Now, obviously, we have the excessive capacity, power generating capacity, because obviously Ukraine has now, like, you know, halved its population, essentially. Probably the most they have now is 25 million people. So this excessive capacity is being destroyed, and it's going to be continued to be destroying until only minuscule amounts or number of capacity left for the future, whatever they will be. They will be, if Ukraine is preserved in any shape, it will be agrarian country with no army. And yeah, you don't need much capacity. And that's what is happening, that full total demolition of the war economy, which was in Ukraine since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And that will continue. And even the Ukrenergo, Central Energo, however they call it now, stated about 5 days ago, it's be conscious, they stated another 3-4 nights like this, and there will be no power generating capacity in Ukraine left. That means the lights are off forever.
And what effect might this have on the front line? Is this possible to cause a collapse on the front line as well?
I mean, Russians move slowly. They are really not into this yet. I mean, there are some significant, obviously, penetrations. But yes, it will. Because obviously, as already stated, you can take a look at some videos. They use now steam engines because they cannot use, first, they have a very limited park of the diesel engines. There was a number of their railroads, which are the key for the supply of all kinds of those forces. For example, if you take a look at Kupiansk and Kavsharovka, it's a huge railroad, basically, hub there, you know. So then suddenly, they have a very limited number of their diesel engines. And all those not only grid, which powers your electric trains, which are critical, and the stations, which are called the tagovoy station, which are thrust stations, because you don't just have this, you know, continuous line. You have to have the intermediate power stations, which are called thrust stations, which provide the, you know, what feed for the some specific sectors of the electric trains. It's pretty much gone now. And suddenly, you have a very limited maneuver capacity in terms of the diesel engines, which you have very few, because Ukraine was the most electrified railroad system in the Soviet Union. And then now, yes, I already stated, they use, like Vinnytsia, you can take a look, they use steam engines because they have nothing to, you know, nothing left. And obviously, that goes to basically paralyzed, which is already happening, any kind of the logistics in the operational and strategic rear for Ukraine. And Yes, that's the other thing, you know. So basically, their troops at the front line being isolated from the last remaining supply lines which they had, because you cannot do much with the, especially so-called roads. And if you take a look at Ansari, they try to put those nets, you know, anti-drone nets, they do not help really much. And obviously, any movement of the automobiles, any kind, including the trucks, immediately gone, destroyed. So there you go. And that's pretty much cutting off their last, umbilical cord to any kind of the supplies.
So it just doesn't seem like, I mean, just mathematically that Ukraine can just continue to go on just too much longer. I mean, we're nearing the 4-year mark, and a lot of people, me being one of them, didn't really think it could have gone this long without Ukraine collapsing. But I mean, there does have to come a point mathematically that the Ukraine side just can't maintain the continuity, whether it's at the strategic level or at the front line level. How do you see it playing out? Let's say through the winter.
It's probably will continue the same. And let's be very honest. And I know it sounds horrible, and it is horrible. Make no mistake. I'm not some fanboy, you know, sitting there and, you know, just literally, oh my God, look at those explosions. But truth is, for Russia, after what had happened, and obviously Western media do not report on that. For example, what happens to Russian prisoners of war, what happens to Russian civilians, hostages, what they do to them, you know. So Russians, majority of Russians, do not feel any kind of brotherly feelings towards these people. Mm-hmm. And so, as you correctly stated, Russians are very content with the situation when they bring more cannon fodder and they kill it. Because we know now that the kill ratio is catastrophic, 1 to 25 to 30. So this is the result of the long-range fires, overwhelming dominance, and inability to really manage resources anymore. So it will continue as long as it takes until, and you know what, it's now going around Russia in a very open manner. You wanted to fight it to the last Ukrainian? Well, do it. There will be last Ukrainian. So when they will decide to do something about inside Kyiv, nobody cares anymore in Russia. Honestly. So
you know, even if it took years.
So yeah, it's until it will be the barren land with no male population which can procreate, because I repeat it again and again. Many people think, oh yeah, he's so cynical. No, I'm not cynical. And I know how horrifying it sounds. Russia is in the business of basically killing the rest of the sperm bank of Ukrainian men. Simple as that. Because their betrayal, many people do not understand metaphysical and cultural issue here between Russians and Ukrainians. Russians do not view Ukrainians as brotherly people anymore. That's the whole thing. Putin obviously cannot say, you know, cannot come out, or Lavrov, and say, oh no, yeah, we're going to kill them all and we don't care. He said he have to go out. He have to massage public opinion that, yeah, for us it is the tragedy. In some sense it is the tragedy, but there is no pity or sympathy anymore to Ukraine, because their level of betrayal.
Yeah.
And especially,
nevertheless, they, at least according to Lavrov today, they would still stop the killing in the event that sanity returned to the Ukrainian leaders and they stopped.
Absolutely.
The war.
Yeah. That's no problem. You know, but before, unless it happens, the machine continues to work. And this is the thing which evidently Rubio has to understand and put into his little mind of the lawyer from Florida and errand boy for Miriam Adelson, that this is out of his league. He cannot grasp those things. Neither can CIA, evidently, because these guys are, their level of expertise is, you know, killing some political leader or false flag. The reality is they never saw anything like this. They really don't have reference point. They do not understand what is happening. This is the largest war in Europe since World War II. And I am on record. We are witnessing the last salvos of the World War II. Simple as that.
Well, we are unfortunately witnessing a lot of ugly things, and we're going to continue to watch it. As always, even when the answers are not really pleasant, we always appreciate you coming on and telling it like it is. So thank you very much for coming on today.
My pleasure, Danny. Anytime.
and just direct people to SmoothieX12, where you don't have to wait every week for Andre to be on our show. You can go and check him out, and there's quite a few things he's got on there right now. So SmoothieX12 on YouTube, and you can find Andre there. Thank you very much, folks, for being with us today. We got one more show for you today. We're going to look on a domestic case here. I think it's listed at 3:30. We're probably going to push that to 3:45, get us a little bit more time to get ready. And there's a potential shutdown deal for this horrible and this really embarrassing and ugly shutdown that's going on. It's great for politicians, really, from both sides, but it's awful for Americans, no matter how the thing works out. We're going to show you why today at 3:45 p.m. Join us then, and I'll tell you why on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.